Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Tossed Popcorn is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hi, I'm Liana Holston.
And I'm Sienna Jekyll.
And welcome to Tossed Popcorn, the podcast where two idiots watch every film on the AFI's 100 Greatest American Movies of All Time, the very slightly less racist 10th Anniversary Edition.
This podcast is a safe space for people who don't know anything about movies. Today we're watching Casablanca, number 3 on the AFI list. Warning, there will be spoilers for this very old, silly film.
We'll start with our voice memoed predictions. We take note at the beginning of each movie for each other. We record on our phones what we think it's about right before we watch.
Sienna, here is my prediction of what I thought Casablanca would be.
Hi, Sienna. It's Liana. I'm about to watch Casablanca. I've seen this film before. I saw it in 2017. I hated it so much. I watched it in a movie theater in the summer because I thought the movie theater would have air conditioning, but it was that old Art Deco theater off campus, and it did not have any AC. I was very sweaty the whole time. I was eating a chocolate bar, which I instantly regretted. A friend of mine did once make a fun, cute joke that it was like I was experiencing Casablanca in 4D. So that's something. Okay, bye.
Okay.
There's no information about the actual film for you.
But now I know, you know, your general feelings about it. Now I know what it means to you.
That's true. Yeah, it's the vibe. It was less a prediction, more a vibe check from me. Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's my prediction of Casablanca.
Hi, Liana. It's Sienna, your podcast partner. So Casablanca, I know that this ends with a plane, with flying away in a plane, and for that reason, I believe that I once thought I'd seen Casablanca when I saw a movie in a hotel that ended with a plane. So based on that, I'm going to guess that a woman is in a field, has a love story with an imaginary man, and then at the end she leaves through the heathers. That's it. Bye-bye. Love you.
I think the movie that I saw was actually called Through the Heathers.
Oh. I love that. I love that so much. Should we start with a cute little bit of historical context for the listener?
Please.
All right, everybody. Here's the deal. Casablanca, an American film, was released in November of 1942. That's, guess what? The middle of the Second World War. What a dang time. It's set in December of 1941, which is right around when Pearl Harbor was during the war, and that was the U.S.'s entry onto the global stage when we declared war against Japan.
and a couple other key dates if you want them. If you don't, press that skip 30 seconds button. I don't care. Here we
key
go.
Key facts, key dates.
We love it. November 8th, 1942, U.S. and British troops land at several points on the beaches of Algeria and Morocco, Morocco being where Casablanca is.
Oh.
November 26th, Casablanca premieres in New York City. January 12th to 23, there was 23rd. Wow. There was something called the Casablanca Conference. Churchill and FDR met in Casablanca to talk about their next moves. And that is also where they decided that they were going to demand unconditional surrender from Germany, Italy, and Japan, which ended up having a million bummer ramifications going forward. And the interesting thing is, on the last day of the Casablanca Conference, Casablanca the movie had its official U.S. premiere. One other important date is that in June of 1940, the Germans marched through Paris. That becomes a very prevalent part of this movie.
Wow. Those are great facts. Hello, everybody who just skipped 30 seconds. We just heard some wonderful facts. So, geez. So I was wondering about that Casablanca was a real place. Like, all that was a true story in certain ways.
I thought you might ask, is Casablanca real? And I was like, oh, I don't actually know. So I Googled it. And yes, it's a real port town in Morocco.
A reminder for the listeners, Liana is a history minor, so we count on her to know all the real facts.
Another reminder for the listeners, Sienna majored in American studies, so she would know arguably more facts.
Well, it's the World War. I will say, so I did watch this movie with my father there, which was helpful.
Oh.
It really helped to understand what was going on. So from my understanding, what happened in this, thanks to my father being there to help me. Mm-hmm. Because, by the way, that map scene, which is the very first, like, 4 seconds of the movie, I had to rewind while the map was still, because I was like, whoa, 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 going too fast. So, this is Casablanca. Casablanca, oh, as they all call it. Casablanca is under French rule. It's in French in Morocco, but France has just been taken over by the Nazis. But Casablanca, since there are no actual German troops there taking it over, it still remains French. It remains free as much as it can. But there, and people go from Europe to Casablanca to get to America. So the whole goal for everybody there, it's this city of refugees, and they're trying to get their papers to get to America. That's mm-hmm. the goal. That's the setup.
You got it, babe.
I cannot believe how well I got that.
That's beautiful. You nailed it.
Thank you. Okay. And then we have Bogey, Humphrey Bogart.
Oh my God.
Bogey. We got Inge.
Wow. I'm hating all of these nicknames, actually.
Ingrid Bergman.
Bergman. There are three main characters in this film-ish. Rick, Ilsa, and Victor. And they're in, guess what? A love triangle. Spicy. So yeah. I am so starved for gossip in quarantine that this was like almost fun to watch just to be like, what are they gonna do? Anyway, Rick is Casablanca based. He owns a cafe called Rick's Cafe Americaine, and Ilsa yes. and Rick had a love affair in Paris, but Victor Laszlo is A, very hot, B, married to Ilsa, but then he got by the Germans and mm-hmm. They took him to a concentration camp. And while he was there is when Ilsa met Rick in Paris. In Casablanca, Ilsa and Victor arrive at Rick's cafe because they are now trying to get exit visas to go to America. Should we do phone notes? Should we dive in? So every time Sienna and I watch a film, we take little notes on our phone of just thoughts we've had that pop up. And, we would love to share a smattering of them with each other and, of course, with you, our beloved listeners, today. Well, I gotta say, I love anything that starts with a map because I immediately am like, oh, all right. I feel literally more oriented. I've got a better sense of what's going on. That being said, for about maybe 20 minutes of the film, I didn't know any of the characters' names or who was on which side because I had a very dumb feeling that it was going to do a Wizard of Oz and switch from black and white to color.
So you were waiting for that, and so you were really paying attention?
I was like, well, okay. At some point, I'm going to be able to tell who's German and who's French because it's going to be in color and their uniforms are different.
So I can just wait for that part. So, okay, Liana, is that what you think all movies before like the 60s did? Did they all change at some point?
They start out with 5 minutes of like grim facts about the world through a newscast. And then they're like, and now we're in Oz. And it's color.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You must have been so disappointed when you got halfway through.
I couldn't believe. I was like, this intro scene is so long.
At the beginning of the film, we start with a man in white being chased through Casablanca by officers. And he ends up getting shot.
I gotta say, I love, one of my first phone notes was that all of fighting in 1940s film is just tastefully yanking people.
Even when they die, even when they're killed.
It's just a yank. You get yanked with a bullet, and then it's like, oh, they fell. It's literally, it's my kind of violence, because I really can't stomach any gore. So for me, it was like the most I can handle was the hint of a gunshot going off and then a man in a white suit just tumbling to the ground with some smoke behind him.
For sure. So much smoke. That was one of my notes, actually, was smoke. There's just smoke everywhere. My dad and I were like, we thought it was so funny that these people are like, no, don't kill me. I'll stay alive. I won't die here in Casablanca. And like a drag from their cigarette. Life is sacred.
Oh my God.
Just filling their lungs with smoke.
I had a similar thought of at the very beginning, a plane flies low over the town and there's that beautiful woman, because they're all beautiful because it's an insane industry. And she looks at the plane and she's like, maybe tomorrow we'll be on that plane. And I was like, girl, you don't want to be on that plane. It was rickety at best. Oh my God. Don't fly a transatlantic in that.
Okay, a note I have. One of my favorite parts of this movie was the extremely chaotic woman on Spanish guitar. Do you remember her?
Of course.
So Rick's Cafe, Americon, or whatever, at this cafe, that's where Sam plays, that's Rick Bogey owns the cafe, mm-hmm. And one of the performers, there's like three songs in this, and one of the songs is sung by this, like, opera singer, it seems like, who's timidly like patting the neck of her guitar, singing like, and not even really playing the actual instrument. It was so, so funny to me. As a person who plays guitar, I've never actually seen that being a way that you play, but I guess it's like exotic. I guess it's Spanish.
Wow. I didn't know you played guitar.
I do. I do play guitar.
Okay, instrument brag. I really missed in this film that British couple from the very beginning. Do you remember them? They were sitting at a cafe table and reading the newspaper or something, and they turned to somebody and were like, what's going on? And the person explained it, and then they sort of just chuckled with one another, and one said, we hear very little, and we understand even less. And I was like, well, that's a fun vibe. Can that be refeatured later on, please? Can we get a reprise? I would love. And then we didn't.
They should come back and just be doing commentary throughout the whole film.
Oh my God, I would love if it had a Greek chorus that was just a clueless upper-class British couple. I think, well, golly, Jesus, things are really taking a turn. Another tiny gun's been pulled. Well.
So she was with Rick and Victor?
Scandal. Can't wait to talk about this over tea.
Oh no, Richard, it's time for an ad break. We'll be right back.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
There were many moments in the film where I thought, wait, is this a musical? Because, you know, a couple just performer, entertainer, singers were singing. And I was like, oh, maybe not. But then frickin' Ingrid bursts out with a hum of that frickin' song that plays over and over in the movie when she's like, play it, Sam. Play As Time Goes By. And then he's like, I forgot it. She's like, okay, I'll hum a few bars. And at that point, I was like, maybe this is a movie musical. And how much better would it have been if Humphrey Bogart had at some point just burst into a tap dance?
Oh my gosh, I never thought about that before. Bogey singing.
Do people call him Bogey, or is this just you trying to start something?
I guess maybe. My father definitely calls him that, but he's not really one to trust. I shouldn't really take all my info from him. I mean, I just think every movie from this time, the way they thought about movies was like, yeah, we're going to entertain people. You know, like there's a war happening. Let's sing something.
Yeah,
like it.
I mean, that's a great point. It must be said, this was the middle of the war. And I was uncomfortable with all of the American nationalism that comes through in the film. It's not surprising that it happens because Americans needed a sort of heartening thing to watch. But there was one scene where three people in a row go, to America, and they toast the country. And I was like, "Gul." We should not do this, please. Also, like, we're where the Nazis are now. And that's really, I just couldn't get past that.
Yeah. One note that I wrote down that I thought was so funny was when Ingrid Bergman is like, later at the end, towards the end, when she's talking to Victor, and he basically figured out something happened with her and the Bogues back in the day.
Oh my God.
Her and Rick. And hooked up. He goes and talks to her about it in a pretty like touching and adult, mature scene discussing, you know, their love for each other. And basically she goes like, no, I didn't cheat on you while you were at a concentration camp. And he's like, okay, good. And then she's like, okay, I'm off to Rick's.
Oh my God.
I am infuriated at this film for casting Humphrey Bogart as Rick, because Victor Laszlo is so objectively hotter than Humphrey Bogart. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to say it. It's a hot take, and it's one that I will stand by, because holy God, this Victor guy, I thought it was Jude Law when he walked in. And then my brain was like, it's 1942. That's not Jude Law. But I held out hope. And he's got a Jude Law vibe. He looks beautiful. He actually serves a cause instead of Rick being like, well, the only person I serve is myself because I'm jaded and a white woman broke my heart and I'm going to pound a table and it's going to be the Adam Driver wall punch of 1942. The Adam Driver wall punch of 1942 is when Rick slams his fist on the table after Ilsa leaves his cafe. He's been drinking for hours because she just showed up. He hadn't seen her in years. She showed up with her husband, who everybody thought was dead. And then they left, and he's been a grumpy boy sitting in the cafe. So then he pounds his fist on the table. And in that moment, it had big, big Marriage Story vibes. A film I have not seen, but I've seen the memes.
I did love that line. I'm the only cause I'm interested in. Ugh, can you imagine somebody tweeting that right now?
Yes, we're seeing it happen. I think that's also why it was so unappealing. It's like, we're seeing a lot of white men these days be like, I'm apolitical. White people in general, not just men, but a lot of white men saying like, well, you know, this isn't about me. Like, it's, I don't need to have a voice in this. I just need to worry about myself. Rugged individualism, America, blah, 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 blah. And that is also why it sat so poorly with me. It's like, right, there's stuff going on. You got to go help people.
It's just so funny to frame it as a cause. Like, there are so many causes out there, and I'm the only cause I care about. Self-care. So funny.
He just starts doing a face mask. May I do? I've got a few quick rants that I just got.
Please, I'd love to hear.
Okay. It sounds like Rick's dialogue was written by Ernest Hemingway. And that is not a compliment. Because at one point, Rick says, I remember every detail. The Germans wore gray, you wore blue. What? What is that? That's very much got a Farewell to Arms vibes. Again, not a compliment. We also have to talk about, during that long flashback, which I did not need, 15 minutes of my life I will not get back during a flashback montage in Paris.
We finally learn about Ilsa and Rick's history together in a entirely green-screened flashback sequence of their time in Paris together, when they fell in love and drank wine.
When they're talking about what terrible timing for us to fall in love now in the middle of a war. And then he's like, where were you 10 years ago? And she says, I was getting braces. Dude, if you ask where she was 10 years ago and she says she was getting braces, she's too young for you. Do not pursue this woman. She's recently a child.
It's so funny.
Could not get over him calling her kid repeatedly. It was gross. I also got to ask, that scene where she goes to the market and is just looking at lace? Back in Casablanca, while Victor is in a meeting, Ilsa decides to traipse through the market and spend a while looking at a lace tablecloth.
She's looking at this tablecloth and the clerk keeps giving her better and better deals.
Girl, what are you doing? You gotta evacuate this country. You can't be buying a tablecloth right now.
I was wondering what the lace was for. I was nothing. Like, are you going to sew it into something? Is it going to be a tablecloth? Also, that deal was so good. Why didn't she take it if she was going to look at it?
It was a visible bargain. And she said, no, Richard. Captain Reynard should be me too'd. I'm infuriated that this character is allowed and celebrated in this film. The through line in the movie of him making women sleep with him to get their exit visas, disgusting. The fact that the last line of the film is the protagonist of the film becoming friends with this monster, holy God, I hated it.
This is very awkward, and I'm going to tell you why.
Oh God.
Because one of my favorite things about this movie,
Sienna, no.
I wrote down two things. I wrote, I wanted to ask your favorite character and tell you about mine. And mine was... Mine was definitely the police chief.
No.
And then my other thing that I wrote, my final phone note was, I didn't know this was a movie about best friends the whole time.
Were you not at all bothered by him seducing women?
I guess I definitely was. I just... Okay, so there are certain parts about this movie that the charm of the 1940s gave it some points for me.
Ew.
Some of the witticisms were too Hemingway-esque, like you said, but almost all of his were so funny. I loved it.
Okay, but just because he's funny doesn't mean he's not a predator.
That's really, I mean, you're opening my eyes to the other way to see this character, because that's true. And I also didn't pick up on that for quite some time.
Well, and I'm going to say, because I saw this movie a few years ago and I didn't pick up on it then. It was only upon rewatching and when I had to be paying a bit more attention that I noticed it. And I was like, whoa, this is... gross.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know the full history behind this, being not a cinema studies person, but I know about the Hays Codes. Do you know the Hays Codes? Okay. I guess like in the 30s, when they started movies and everything, there weren't rules to keep movies as I don't know, innocent, not explicit about certain things. And this one is when the Hays Codes were intact. At least I believe so, because they don't show blood. When people die, they don't say explicitly anything about sex. They don't say like words. But it was interesting because they definitely, I mean, like it wasn't just heavily implied. It was like the plot points were about the fact that women had to have sex with this man in order to get their papers, but they somehow also kept that.
They didn't say it out loud.
It's like a full plot point. Yeah,
the stressed woman who comes in and she's like, "If you had to do something terrible, would you do it? If you never told your spouse about it, and I'm just going to keep saying things that are alluding to this, but I'm never going to put the nail on the head."
A young woman approaches Rick and subtly asks him what he thinks she should do if the only option that she has to get papers for her and her husband is to sleep with this police captain. Rick ends up helping and she doesn't have to sleep with him, but it's implied that many women have had to before.
I was like, for God's sake, don't sleep with him. Don't go to America. It's not worth it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I loved that it ended up being a best friends thing. I actually quite liked the ending of this movie. What did you think of it?
Okay, the end of the film. There's been some light, I don't know, espionage, if we will. Ilsa has gone to Rick to be like, "Oh no, Richard, I want to stay with you." And then Rick is like, "Nah, girl, you got to get on that plane and go with your husband, Victor, who's way hotter than I am, so I support it." And they're also being chased by the captain, who Victor pulled a tiny gun on and was like, "You got to come with us, but first you got to call the watchtower to let the plane go." But the captain calls the German instead. So the German is chasing the cohort of people who are going to the airfield. And they all arrive, and the German arrives just after Ilsa and Victor have gotten on the airplane, I think. I, unfortunately, am going to say something that is a bummer, which is that the character I most wanted to be was the Nazi captain at the very end, right before he gets shot, because what a dream it would be to pick up a telephone and yell into it, "Hello, get me the radio tower."
I loved when he yelled hello into the phone. I watched it 3 times. Hello.
I think it's also because I don't know how to answer the phone these days. Like, whenever somebody calls me, I don't know how to not sound confused when I say hello, because it always comes out hello. And so I think that's the energy for which I strive, is what he accomplished. Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
The last thing I wrote down, one absolutely insane sentence that was uttered that I think I yelled like, "What?" aloud, was when Rick says, "The problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world."
The hill of beans! I remember him talking about beans too. Because beans had not come up once.
No, they were not a relevant plot point.
And suddenly it was all I could think about.
Also, what is a hill of beans?
I don't know. What kind of beans? Coffee beans?
Oh, that I had not even begun. I was thinking like kidney beans from a can. And then I was thinking, have we decanned the beans? Are they just loose beans? In which case, how do you make a hill out of them? How do you get a structured enough foundation of beans? They're too wet.
I was going to say, you seem to be imagining them wet.
I do. Wet. I really am. Sopping.
How do you pile them?
Exactly.
The wet beans.
I think I missed a lot of the end of the film because I was thinking about a hill of beans and how to construct one. And of course they don't amount to a hill because you can't make a hill.
I think the important lesson here is that perhaps Rick has been using his role as a cafe person in his speech for more of the film than we realized. I think if we go back, he might be actually using
all
his own
metaphors.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I don't give a scone.
Oh no. What a beautiful blueberry she is.
Mm. Oh my gosh. I'm glad you brought up blueberry.
Whoa.
Because a note I just noticed and forgot about is Ferrari. Do you remember Ferrari?
Like the car? The man?
The man.
In the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So I know him from a Christmas movie we watch every year, Christmas in Connecticut. He plays Mr. Yardley. Mr. Yardley, who, what a Christmas. Those are his lines. Okay. We like to make fun of him in our house. Anyway, he's like an actor who's around sometimes and always plays like a disapproving, dapper rich man. And he is Rick's competitor. He owns like the blue monkey cafe
elephant?
Or something.
Macaw,
some bird. Anyway, he owns the
some bird,
competing
your first
cafe.
Suggestion was monkey.
I had to just go with it. Improv, baby. Ferrari owns the competing cafe. And anyway, very funny actor who I love to see in things. And I wrote, Ferrari looks exactly like a blueberry in that fez.
Okay, I do have an immediate question, which is, why a blueberry? The film was in black and white.
That's a good point. It's a great question. I don't know. I think I just knew.
Maybe the food metaphors are trickling down to all of us. Just to circle back one more time to this hill of beans, I do like to imagine that Ilsa hears that and then spends the entire flight from Casablanca to America just thinking to herself, what the hell was he talking about? A hill of beans? What if they're wet?
Wet.
Victor's like, darling, are you all right? She's like, the beans, Victor!
I can't stop thinking about the beans!
We have to turn around.
We'll always have beans.
Play it, Sam. Play as beans go by.
Speaking of playing it again, it's time to play another commercial.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Okay, well, I'm going to give some final badges and trages, as I call them. So I would rate this 4 fez caps out of 5.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I actually enjoyed it much more than I thought I would. That's why I get so many points.
Sure.
And it also just ended up having more pros than cons for me. I guess it was because my expectations were so low and I didn't think I would understand it. And I ended up actually understanding some of it. Okay. Good things. Badges. And you can jump in here if you have any.
Sure.
It gets a badge for the surprise gun pull. There were several times in this movie where the camera was on someone who's unsuspecting, and then the shot changes to a person holding a gun.
There were so many. We have to talk about how small those guns are.
They're so small. That's what makes it even more scary, is you turn around and you're like, hey, whoa! It takes you a while to see the gun because it's so little. You have to scan their whole body before you realize you're staring into the barrel.
During the France montage, much as I hated it, I did enjoy learning that disco balls existed in 1941.
Oh my gosh, I didn't notice that. Where did that come up?
Okay, great question. I don't know.
It was like, wrote down.
They're dancing at a club of some sort, and it's a high angle shot, and you can see a disco ball.
Really?
And I was like, what?
Yeah. Okay.
Can you believe?
Listen, everybody, I missed that the first time, but I'm going to watch this movie again just for that.
No, don't do that.
That's worthwhile for everybody.
No, it's not worth it. I'll find a screenshot. I'll send you a gift.
That's a great Easter egg. That should be in the special features of this film. Like, look for the disco ball. Maybe they added it in post.
Oh my God. Yeah, the remastered edition. You're like, what does this movie need? You know what? I think it needs a sense of disco.
It also gets a badge for, explaining everything to me in great detail at the end. In my book, that's a good movie.
Oh my
One
God.
That at the end says, all right, here's exactly what she's doing, and here's exactly where you're going to go, and here's exactly why I did everything that I did. Thank you, Bogey. No ambiguity at all. It also gets a point for the old Hollywood wit, as I said, though I see how that could also be a trage, because sometimes it was a little gross.
Yeah.
Do you have any to add into the badges you'd give it?
I do have trages.
Okay, great. Well, why don't you kick it off?
Okay, and listener, for anybody who's confused, a trage is the opposite of a badge. It's because it was a tragic part of the film that this happened. So it's, you know, instead of awarding, we would sort of, I don't know, slop with mud this thing.
Yeah.
Everything I said before, and then also, the scene where all the Germans are coming together and singing a German song, a lot of German officers stand up and start singing a rousing rendition of a German nationalist song, very much like Tomorrow Belongs to Me from Cabaret vibes, is just such an argument for why we should never let white men sing in groups. It's too risky. We just don't know what could happen. And so to counter them, Victor Laszlo, hot Victor, rallies the room and gets, I believe, Sam to play the Marseillaise. And so the whole room sings the French national anthem to outsing the Germans as a show of French patriotism. It really has a strong vibe of every high school musical theater student trying to outsing one another. I have to give a trage to every time that Ingrid Bergman's character, Ilsa, said something along the lines of, everything she knew or ever became was because of him. Or at the very end, when she and Richard have just finished, like, pressing their mouths together, I'm not going to call that a kiss, because I was cringing the whole time.
So after this whole love triangle, the confusion in Paris, where Ilsa was dating Rick, even though Victor was still alive, she thought he was dead, blah, 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 blah. She basically has to clear it up with both men. She tells Victor, listen, I'm sorry about that. And Victor's really cool with it because he's so hot and cool. And then she goes off to see Rick and to explain that she'll stay with Rick forever if he lets Victor go. Okay, that's it.
And she turns to him and she says, I don't know what's right any longer. You have to think for both of us now. Awful.
Yeah, that was awful.
Those are my tragedies.
Never let a man think for the both of you. Yeah.
Yes. It's so dangerous. I would give this one gin joint out of five. And only I would only give it one because of Sam.
A trage for on-screen reading. I know a lot of these old movies are going to do this to me. And no matter how much time they give me, when they hold a note up to the camera, I will never be able to read it all. They use cursive.
Sienna, have you seen Star Wars?
I have. I don't understand a thing. And part of that likely comes from the text crawl.
Right.
It's my worst nightmare. I just enjoy the colors, like the yellow and the black.
Oh my God. Colors I thought I would get to enjoy in the film Casablanca, but I was wrong.
And then I was pretty unimpressed by the wardrobe as far as a 40s movie goes. That's one thing that can be entertaining. But since she was the only woman... And she changed like once.
They dressed her like a Pixar lamp about to go to the beach.
That is so accurate. Especially because the lamps in this were really like dressed up.
Yeah.
So when she was fancy, you know, she was like a fancy lamp. That's so true.
Yeah, that's a great point. I wonder if in real life the wardrobe was more vibrant because it was actual colors.
Yeah.
And that just didn't come across. Oh, I gotta also give a trage to that woman at the beginning who's like, where were you last night, Rick? I'm so distraught. I'm just taking shots at the bar. And then I'm gonna sing the Marseillaise in a million tears later on in the film. And then I'm gonna go. And that's me.
Goodbye. Yeah, she was hilarious.
Gosh. Well, interesting. It's intriguing that you liked it that much.
No, I love it. I hear your perspective. I would give this one on the higher side because of how entertained I was by the fun characters here and there. I also recognize some of the characters from some Christmas movies I watch. So it was fun to see them. That old like company cast they had back in the day.
Oh my gosh. Well, are you ready to embark on our segment, How to Pretend You've Seen This Film?
If you're ready, I'm ready.
This segment is designed for if you're ever at a party or some sort of gathering and you get cornered by Matt, who went to Emerson, and he's carrying a drink and a book in one arm, and you're like, why did you bring a book to a party? And he's bringing up Casablanca. Here's a few sentences you could say to pretend you've seen this film. Wow, the demonstrated white male heroism. Love that.
Matt, do you think that the love triangle at the heart of Casablanca is speaking to the greater love triangle of powers in the world at the time?
Matt, riddle me this. If I get on a train leaving Paris for Casablanca and you don't get on that train, can we stop talking about this? Oh, I'm so sorry. I have to go. I just learned my husband is alive. Thank you.
Rick demonstrates a sort of rugged individualism that America needs.
Make America Rick again.
Oh my gosh, I would not know what to talk to Matt from Emerson about, even though I've seen it.
And that's a very telling thing, which actually is a perfect segue into should you watch this or, in which we will advise you on whether or not you should watch this film or if you should do something else. Sienna, do you have a stance?
Yes. Okay. After watching this film, I think I would watch it again with children someday.
What?
Because I'd be interested what something about it was sort of fun and spirited enough. I can't remember it now after not sitting and watching it right now. It just feels very boring to think about. But at the time, it felt kind of nice to watch. And I remember thinking I would like the opposite of a Matt from Emerson to be sitting next to me, but instead a small child to hear what they had to get out of it.
Hmm.
So I think I would watch it with children someday near Christmas time while baking something.
Ah, a background cozy film.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I respect that. For me, this question is always going to be, should you watch this or should you watch 1917, the perfect film? Once again, friends and family. George Mackay, if you're near, you gotta watch 1917.
Uh-huh. And can you explain?
Hey, hear me out. It has a lot of similar features. We got war. We got yes. white people. We got music. The music in 1917, honestly, that score slaps. And I will stand by that. It is a good score. It stands on its own. If you're reading a book about World War I as a follow-up after watching the film for the third time in theaters, it's a really good compliment. And and 1917 also is a love story if you watch it the right way. Okay, thank you, the end.
When I saw 1917 with Liana, because yes. we both loved it so much, we decided to see it again.
Yes.
This was like her, I don't know, second time seeing it. She came with a book from the library.
Why is the library an emphasized part of that?
Because you sought it out. Nobody goes to libraries from our generation. You went to a library. You had to look it up. You had to consult the Dewey Decimal System. And you went, got a book about World War I, and you brought it to the film.
Listen. Okay, look, I didn't know if there was going to be traffic. I didn't know if I was going to park really early and have time to read. So yes, I brought The Guns of August by Barbara Tuchman, which is a military history of the first month of the First World War. Sure, I did it.
Now that's out there.
All right, everyone. That's it for Tossed Popcorn's episode on Casablanca.
Casablanca.
Thank you so much for listening. We are on Instagram and Twitter at Tossed Popcorn. Feel free to hop in and join the conversation. And we'll see you next week when we are watching, Sienna, your favorite,
Raging Bull.
Thank you. We love you. Bye.
Bye. On Instagram.
Instagram as at Sienna Jekyll and at Liana Holston. Please check the description for the spelling of our dumb names. We put out episodes every Tuesday, so make sure to subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. See you next week on Tossed Popcorn. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check the iHeartRadio app.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.